Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with my bells here to talk about Amazing Race 34, episode number 2, a supersized episode of The Amazing Race. And here with me to break it down, our Amazing Race panel. First, joining us, our chief Amazing Race correspondent, who I suspect can yodel. It's Jessica Leese. Jess, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob. Before we get started, I forgot my hat. Do I need to bring it in, or is it okay if we just get going without it?
You really should get it.
All right.
You should go get it. Yeah.
I think it's in the car. Mm-hmm. I might have to go get it later.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start and let's see how we go.
We'll see how it goes.
And also back with us, a man who covers all of the reality TV franchises and much more. Of course, you know him as Mike, but I know him by his nickname, Bloom Bloom. Here is, give it up for Mike Bloom.
I did take a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% Glenda and Lumumba's child. So yeah, sorry it had to come out like this.
The resemblance is striking.
I mean, listen, I'm surprised people didn't call it out sooner. I actually did remember my hat. So
yes.
I'm here. I'm ready to go. I've got everything straightened out here. I'm here to talk about Haiti or Jamaica and all the other Caribbean countries on this episode of The Amazing.
No, I really did feel like also that I think that this would be a leg that Mike Bloom would have just crushed. I think that get him some Travelocity points to go to Peru.
Yeah, that's the thing is, Jess, I feel like if you and I were an Amazing Race team together, like this is our five hole, right? And
yes.
Listen, like people were who ran this leg who had no musical ability were absolutely SOL. But that being said, give me any of this above all of the smash this, roll this, saw this from last week. I'm perfectly happy. I loved this episode. 90-minute episode, and I enjoyed every minute of the 90.
Yeah,
it's just too bad we wouldn't have made it past the first leg, Mike.
Exactly. That's the thing. You just have to hope when you enter the race, having the composers that we do, that you hope the opening leg is all the singing and dancing tasks, and then you're definitely screwed from there on out.
Now, the first leg was such a crapshoot that Team Race Podcast, I think, would have been off to a flying start. I think so. Maybe not even needing more than one try for either of the stops on this leg of the Amazing Race. But we'll talk about it all. Rex and Tim, sadly. You know, I was feeling kind of good about Rex and Tim, where that they sort of like they came through last week and they were, you know, what, sixth place? And then they were sort of partnered up with the brothers, and then they ultimately were like, okay, well, these guys, like, they know their way around. That's like seemingly like the weak spot, but just ran into a buzzsaw in a couple of tasks that did not seem to be in the wheelhouse.
And it was a tough leg for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we will have an exit interview. We'll talk with Rex and Tim later on today on Thursday as we gear up for next week's mega leg. Boy, that didn't take long to get to mega leg.
Not surprised. And it's a cheat. Mm-hmm. That's not elimination leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only took 3 weeks to get to the mega leg. We did see it coming. We'll see. I was kind of hoping that for Rex and Tim's sake, I was like, oh, maybe is there a chance we get like a keep racing to keep them going? They were fun to have on the show.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think, listen, when you get Rex Ryan on the show, you hope he's on for more than one leg. But, you know, even if it's just for one, that he'll be able to provide a lot of quality entertainment. And luckily, he was on for not one, but two, even though Rex is always concerned with the things that are at the end of those two legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they really just got off on the wrong foot.
Yep. Okay. What are you going to do? So,
I'm surprised Rex didn't choose the dancing just because of the beat. Well, they probably were less talented at it. It's just, you know, why resist the temptation?
So I'm not going for the low-hanging fruit. And I don't know. Like, I feel like that Rex is not much of a dancer. I think if he was, I think he probably would have been on Dancing with the Stars by now. I mean, he does, you know, work with, you know, maybe cornerbacks. And maybe they have to, like, and again, I'm being totally professional here when I'm talking about their footwork. But I don't think that necessarily. I think they chose the right task here to go with the bells. Unfortunately, it seemed like Tim was the problem. Frickin' Tim.
Yeah, I think Rex is rethinking his choice of partner now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Tim wanted to go on the race, but, you know, you're telling me, like, Darrell Revis wouldn't have been a better partner?
I mean, listen, that would have been an incredible universe that I would have wanted to live in. It was just odd. I tweeted about this last night. Like,
even Bart Scott?
Just seeing this idea of Claire from Big Brother 23 having an out-and-out conversation with former NFL coach Rex Ryan,
yeah.
The topic of discussion being yodeling.
Yodeling.
Like, The Amazing Race can be such a Mad Libs of odd fan fiction things that bring together a smattering from a bunch of different universes. And I absolutely love that we got this one in particular, even though, as you mentioned, perhaps if it was the Ryan brothers, for instance, they would have been able to make it a skosh further. Because, I mean, listen, it seemed like from our perspective, despite Rex's yodel gaffe, they would have been in there to make the mega leg were it not for the bells. The bells seem to truly be like the final nail.
They toll for thee, Rex and Tim. Jess, in your professional opinion, how close do you think that Rex and Tim were to not being last place?
Well, it's tricky because it was an indoor pit stop, so we don't have, like, the position of the sun or anything. I'm going to say, in this modern era of Amazing Race, we don't have the situation where Phil is standing on the mat for hours waiting for the last team to straggle in. I think if it's any more than, like, 45 minutes, Phil goes out and gets them. Like, they're not gonna wait around. They don't have that kind of time or money anymore. So
yeah.
I'm going to guess it might have been... I don't think it was competitive, but I also don't think it was, I don't think they were so far in the back of the pack that it would have been ridiculous to think they could have, you know, one error could have put them back where they wanted to be.
The thing that I was really banking on was, boy, we haven't seen Quentin and Maddie in a shot with any other teams. And it is the classic, like, Amazing Race trope. Distant last place team is acing the tasks. They are back in this. Okay. You thought they were out, but look at them now. They're breezing through everything. And I was like, okay, maybe Quentin and Maddie are, like, you know, 4 hours behind everybody. But no, they do. They did ace the tasks and they do squeak in there before Rex. Mike, did you feel like that maybe Rex and Tim were going to be able to avoid last place?
Oh, 100%. And that's one big reason why I really liked this episode. Now, look, I read the comments last week. I know that we were probably a bit more down on the idea of the scramble than I think a lot of the other people that.
Oh, I'm sorry that we had an opinion, listeners. Why? Who was what on YouTube? Where were these comments?
Why are you reading the comments in the first place, Mike?
No, it's important to get the feedback.
I'm a glutton for punishment. But I also think.
Who said these things, Mike?
I won't name names.
Name
I
the
will
platform. Say that I think, you can name the platform.
I will say all of them.
All of them? Oh, sorry. You love your scramble, everybody.
Well, what I will say, though, is I think from, like, a more, you know, just viewer-based perspective of, okay, I'm just going to, like, watch 42 minutes of The Amazing Race. Like, okay, that's fun. I think it's... Admittedly, and not to like put ourselves up too much on that pedestal, but like I think when you're people who are expressly supposed to come in and be like, okay, we're gonna tell you how each team ended up getting the way that they do, like it was so much more difficult for us. So listen, I was incredibly happy with the return to form this week of like very straightforward in terms of tasks. It was literally just roadblock, detour, pit stop. But what I loved is that the extra 30 minutes gave us plenty of time to get to know so many more of these teams. We got to know so many personal details in only the second leg. And my favorite part is just so much play shifting, right? Just due to, I think, the skill level that the task afforded. Again, instead of last week where it seemed pretty much like just brute force could get you through all three tasks. This one did seem to require some adjudicated skill in all three tasks that we essentially went through. And so there was a lot going on, including Quentin and Maddie, who for my mark might have had like one of the biggest comebacks I've seen on The Amazing Race in recent memory. It's interesting because at the beginning of the leg, you know, they sort of vocalize it of, oh yeah, you know, we got turned around for a few minutes, but we're fine now. We're actually going to the right country. And so you think like, okay, maybe they're like eighth or ninth now, but no, it was a mistake that cost them apparently like a couple of hours time. We see them just coming into the roadblock as Claire and Derek were leaving. And to your point, Rob, they didn't see anybody for the rest of the leg. So I thought they were doomed with all caps. So to see them actually be able to come back, I thought was absolutely thrilling. And as much as it sucks to see Rex and Tim go, I thought it was a really fantastic thing to see. This is why we love The Amazing Race, right? Because in true race-based fashion, anybody can catch up at any point in time. You can never count yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting, Mike, that you say that, because I think one of the reasons we don't see comebacks like that very often is because in this recent era of Amazing Race, we don't let people get that far behind. And I feel like when there was a bigger spread, I understand why they don't do it anymore. Maybe it's not ever going to be practical again, but when there's a bigger spread, I think you can't come back from behind if you never get behind in the first place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had a team screw up like in such a horrible, colossal way that it was worth spending a whole episode on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Are we back to talking about the Jets again between Pets Freds and maybe falling that far behind where they can have a miracle comeback?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if any Bengals were on the race, but they were probably, I guess Rex and Tim were the Bengals in this instance, right? Like they thought they had a comfortable spot right now, but then here come Quentin and Maddie surging up the, you know, on the left-hand side, able to pass them at the very last second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk through this leg of the race. Jess, we are departing in groups of three. We started doing that again last season. Do we like this or is it no difference?
I don't like it because I think we are getting away from placement meaning anything. And, you know, we always say that the only thing you have to do on Amazing Race is not come in last place. But to make it more competitive, you know, they give away prizes on the legs. And then the other thing that you get for finishing ahead of another team is that you get to then start that leg ahead of another team. And in this instance, I don't think it mattered that much because this really mimics the order in which they checked in the first place. And that we had that same bunch that all checked in within a few seconds of each other. I think they all left at the same time, mm-hmm. But I do like, and I also don't like that they've moved away from, you know, you checked in at 3:47 p.m. So now you can depart at 3:47 a.m. I used to like that part of it, too, mm-hmm. because it gave you a sense of where everybody was. And they're kind of obfuscating that now. They don't want you to know. But the only reason we'd ever know when anybody finished ahead or behind of anybody else is when we ask them in their exit interview. So we're doing a public service, but mm-hmm. It would be nice if the show would give us a little more sense of what the spread is.
Yeah, and we haven't gone back and looked at least I haven't, to see, like, you know, it's like, okay, these three teams finished in there, but it might be like, you know, somebody came in like a minute later. Like, well, what's the cutoff between where they're grouping these teams?
I will also say that I think in this case, they could have afforded a bit more of a gap time between groups. So these were only 15 minutes, and it worked out nicely in that, like, the drive ended up being such a good equalizer, in addition to the roadblock, which really was truly the great equalizer, and that a lot of the teams ended up getting caught up to each other. But with so many teams, right, it was 3-3-4-4, I think, were the divisions. Like, I think they could have spaced it apart a bit more, right? Like, give a little bit more flowers to the first three teams by having them depart 30 minutes ahead of the others instead. But yeah, I mean, I could understand why they did it last leg, and assumingly for future legs when they're flying to other countries, right? Because the entire idea was like, okay, well, now we're flying everyone on one big plane and we're starting it that way. Here, though, it was one of those rare, at least for this era of The Amazing Race, okay, we're going to pick up where we left off in the exact same location. And so it was still a little odd. I'm a little intrigued as to why exactly they still instituted this. I will imagine in future legs, once we actually start with the big old amazing race plane flying into another country and starting people off this way, that I think it'll be a bit more palatable than, again, okay, well, you checked in first place. Congratulations. But you're going to put you in cluster, almost like getting on an airplane, right? Like you're in a departure group one. We'll call you up from the amazing race counter and then you're able to check in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Mike, galaxy brain time. Do we think they had a pit stop? Was there any kind of pit stop? Because there were a couple of seasons ago, I think we noticed that people were checking in and then they were just continuing and they'd get the shot of them opening the clue on the next thing, but they weren't actually stopping for a pit stop because they were keeping the schedule really tight. Do you think they had any kind of break?
That's a really good question. Because I want to say like the opening leg of season 32 may have had that similar keep on racing effect, or maybe it was the second leg as well that got cut out. It could very much be the case, especially considering that, like, again, the next leg wasn't any sort of flight. It was just, hey, drive yourself across the border. Maybe it was like a few hours break, right? Because they ended up leaving in the afternoon. And we talked about the sort of truncated time frame that the scramble took place in. Maybe it was like, it was either a 24-hour pit stop or it was a zero-hour pit stop, essentially.
Yeah, because I asked Asa and Nina about how long was all of the first leg, and they said, I think it was about like 3 hours. So I wonder if...
I've done podcasts that are longer than the scramble.
For sure, for sure. The scramble was very quick, but I feel like it would have been later in the evening. It didn't seem like the sun was going down. I wonder if maybe the first day, like, it was 3 hours, but maybe they got started, like, later. I don't feel like it was all the same day, the first two legs. But it'll be a good question to ask Rex and Tim.
Yeah, we'll add it to our list. Mm-hmm. Under all of the football questions.
That could be a Tim question.
Yeah, we need some Tim questions.
Yeah.
We were joking before we got on here that maybe I'd just let Rob interview Rex and then Tim and I can have our own separate conversation.
Yeah. And really, time is but one letter away from Tim. So that's, you know, just keep pushing those all to him. Yeah. I mean, on Survivor, they're talking about, Justine is just that her parents wanted a boy named Justin. They just added an E to it. Maybe Tim is just time with an E.
This is getting into Gary Busey territory.
Drop the E, keep the Tim.
Yeah. Okay. I do wonder if Livin actually could be an acronym and a Buseyism, but maybe that's
we know how Cody does on vocabulary tests. I do not think that's the correct spelling if it ends up being an acronym.
Yeah, maybe save that for the B&B. Okay, so our teams departed, and we are going to be heading for Grünwalderhof. Huh?
Grünwalderhof?
Yeah. Grünwalderhof, Austria, not Germany. This will be the thing that we think initially sinks Quentin and Maddie's games. Now, here's the question. How much do we put it at their feet versus how much do we put it at the feet of this one woman,
Mike,
that they asked?
Stop said, it like, with these oh, jokes. Yes, okay, we get it. We get it. Knock it off.
But there, she's like, oh, yeah, it's definitely in Germany. It's like 10 minutes away. I think obviously she should take some blame. But at the same time, like, you gotta have enough common sense, especially early on in the Amazing Race where killer fatigue hasn't really set in, to be like, when it says Innsbruck, Austria, I'm pretty sure that's not in Germany.
Well, I liked the second lady they asked directions from, who literally said in this, you know, very, very German deadpan, this is not in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Jess, when was the last time we had Amazing Racers realize, oh, we're in the wrong country?
It's been a while. Mm-hmm. It's been a minute since we've had that kind of a screw up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so ultimately, that's going to be what we're going to see Maddie and Quentin having to overcome the entire race. And they look like they're in trouble. As far as the other teams go, nobody else really struggled with getting there. Everybody, you know, ultimately got their maps out, and it seemed like that everybody else, was able to get there without much of an issue.
I mean, German highway system, very efficient.
Very efficient. That's what they say.
Exactly. The trains run in time, and so does the highways. I will say Shariq very much, I think, unfortunately, representing her generation, right? And being like, I don't know how to read a map. I'm only used to getting directions on my phone. Like, that is totally respectable. Going on The Amazing Race, you should probably learn how to read a map, especially since I'm assuming the play that they had set up was that Linton was going to do all the driving and Shariq was going to do all the navigating.
Yeah, well, Kim and Penn last season said that the number one thing they did to prepare was they did orienteering. And they just practiced reading maps and finding themselves on maps and getting there as fast as possible. I think you should add that to your list. Like, do you know how to swim? Do you know how to drive stick? And have you taken an orienteering course?
Update the JL rules. Okay.
There you go.
But just, I think it's interesting because that when the show started, like, it probably was not uncommon for people to have, like, you know, a giant like map or atlas in their car in 2001 when people were first doing The Amazing Race. But now it would be unimaginable that people have maps in their cars.
Yeah. And that's probably why we see that they had maps furnished to them this time. But you also, even with the maps, every time they ask someone for directions, they're whipping out their phone and they're like just copying the directions off the phone onto the map.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I cannot remember what it was like. I know I've been on trips where there was no GPS and we had to rely on maps, but I don't remember what that was like anymore. I think we've all, like, that part of our brains just kind of, it's been taken out and replaced by TikToks.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I think is also interesting is that to add on to that, you know, Shariq is not entirely comfortable reading a map, yet Linton also brings up, like, okay, all these other teams that we got grouped with are leaving. Maybe we should follow them. And she's like, no, we follow them. We're behind them, which in general is, like, I guess, a good philosophy to take maybe in life, right? Blaze your own trail.
Followers are always behind.
But maybe The Amazing Race you could follow, you know, like, I think it's okay to drift off a little bit, especially early on when you're not exactly that confident in your navigational skills.
Well, but then we saw what happens when you do that. What if you follow the team that's going the wrong way?
I mean, in that case, at least you then have two or three other teams that you can be alongside, as opposed to if you're by yourself lost, then you've pretty much sunk your game unless you're Quentin and Maddie and expecting umpteenth musical tasks coming.
Yeah. I thought that was the best thing that Rex and Tim did, was when they said, hey, we're going to follow Marcus and Michael. These guys know what they're doing. And that's really, it was like once they got separated from Marcus and Michael, that was like kind of the beginning of the end.
Yeah, but that was down to the tasks. Like, I think they would have been content to run the race together the whole time.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out so well for Croquetas and Will and Abby.
Let's talk about our yodeling task. Just, have we done this before on The Amazing Race?
I feel like we have. There's been a lot of, like, Bavarian/Tyrolean singing tasks over the years. And I don't think it's, like, they try to set it up a little bit differently, but this is very reminiscent of what they have people do in this area.
Have either of you ever attempted to yodel?
Not since that boy was found in a Walmart doing it. That made me feel like my time has passed. You either learn at a young age or you don't learn it at all, in my opinion. It's something that has to be enforced to stick in your gray matter for these number of years and does not go away, unlike map reading skills.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't actually making them yodel either.
Yes.
Because there is a special thing you have to do. And Mike, as a singer, you know, you have to switch between your chest voice and your head voice. And that's what yodeling basically is. They weren't actually making them do that. They were just making them sing the song. And it's probably because if you're tone deaf enough, you may not have a distinction between your chest voice and your head voice.
That's interesting. So I guess the more I think about it, the more I realize, maybe is my Krista Hasty impression, Rob, a yodel without even realizing it? A backdoor yodel?
Backdoor yodel. It could be. Can I say something that maybe I'm embarrassed to admit? I don't really understand why people yodel. Is it, they seem to imply that it's to call the cows. Do the cows respond to the yodel? Are people just doing it for fun?
I mean, you got to make your own fun. They have long winters there. And, there's all kinds of weird things you can do with the human voice. That's just for you, RHAPOOC. There's all kinds of weird things you can do, and different cultures find different things they can do with their voice. Like, I think this is kind of in the realm of, like, the two of them throat singing, where you...
I was about to say throat singing, yeah.
Yeah. So this is just like, oh, that one guy did it and it sounded kind of cool. So it's how all of music works. Another guy riffs on it. And then pretty soon they're off in their own little realm yodeling.
Right. And the trending sounds, people want to reuse it. Right.
Yep. All of music is copying and iterating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's a sample, right? That has been used throughout time. It's free domain. Yeah. I don't think it's used for any animal calls, but I will say this is definitely, I think, one of the trickier roadblock prompts I think I've seen a little bit, right? I'm like, who wants to call the cows home? Nary was there a cow in the distance, though perhaps it was because the yodeling was so bad from these contestants that the cows are like, I'm not going anywhere near them.
They're moving away from it.
They only go to good moving yodeling. Away. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we had where Claire and Derek X were the first to arrive. And we almost never see this on The Amazing Race, where one team is having so much trouble that almost every single... Were they the last team to depart from?
Almost, yeah. They were leaving as Quentin and Maddie were arriving. Right. So they went from first out of one to that one because they slipped all the way down to 11th by the end of the roadblock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was a struggle for Claire. Derek X called his partner Tone Deaf.
You know, some people, if you never learn it, it's the hardest thing in the world. And if you studied it since you were small, I feel like maybe their mistake there was they should have had Derek do the roadblock. But 2020 hindsight, they didn't have enough information.
Mike, how do you think?
Only 2022.
Mike, how do you think that Derek would have done on this roadblock based on what we've seen of him on these shows?
Listen, I do not want to necessarily fan the flames of the reality TV stands out there. But honestly, so far, The Amazing Race, like, Derek X kind of seems like the perfect partner. Like, this guy has so many random skills that he's pulling from, right? Like, he was able to cleave that ice block in twain last time super easily. This time he played piano and so, like, aced the bells as well. So I think he actually would have done fairly okay. I mean, we showed off a bit of his musical skills when he played that Lord of the Latrine trumpet last time. So maybe that musical ability would have carried over to the yodeling, too.
Jess, do you know about the Lord of the Latrine?
I was still watching the season at the time that Lord of the Latrine happened.
Yeah, I feel like that the costume is not totally dissimilar from the Lord of the Latrine that they wore on this episode.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, when... I think we've seen Alpine stuff before, obviously, when Nicole was Oktoberfest, right? Or when she wore the punishment costume, I think, in Big Brother 16. So we've definitely doted on that as well across CBS reality. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing as well, is like, if Derek wouldn't do well at this, then, sir, you have no right to, like, outright diagnose Claire as tone deaf. You know, do you have a degree on your wall, Derek X? Are you allowed to do that if you indeed would have also suffered at the hands of these yodelers?
Yeah. All right. So the teams are showing up to get there. That's from the first pair, newlyweds. That's the, I guess, team name for Glenda and Lumumba, who had a great episode. They're so much fun to watch.
I love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the main ones I think of like, okay, I'm glad we got that extra time with the teams because, like, again, we really knew nothing about them outside of the height jokes last time. And now we know, like, their desires for what comes next. Literally, once they get back home, the family making starts right now.
In the boom, boom like room.
Exactly. It's its own. Is that, you think that's where the nickname's going to come from? I'm very intrigued by the future nickname that they've already planned out.
Could this be the first instance of a child conceived on The Amazing Race?
Maybe that's a reason why they decided, like, oh, we heard these plans. Okay, no pit stops. We don't want to have a team leave due to, like, a positive pregnancy test. You have to keep going, okay? If you want to do it, it's on your own time.
I think they'd be okay. The Amazing Race is very short.
Yeah, they wouldn't know until they got back.
Yeah, I think that if a baby could be conceived on The Amazing Race, I think the teams could finish The Amazing Race.
Yeah, they wouldn't even know anything was different.
Yeah. I think it'd be okay. Boy, what a story that would be for Boom Boom. Is Boom Boom short for something?
I hope so. I don't want the child's name to be Boom Boom. Boom Boom sounds like the nickname for a linebacker at The Ohio State University. Like, what a future are you trying to create Rex for this child?
I like that kid. Boom Boom.
I've already recruited him.
Yeah, get him in the 3-4 defense.
Yeah, but we don't know, like, we don't know what position this kid's going to play because we don't know what size he's going to be.
At the start of the sentence, I thought you were going one way, and I was happy with where it landed. Okay.
Yeah, but I do like the fact that Glennon Lumumba, I like also the running bit besides Boom Boom. And besides Lumumba yelling out at the roadblock in front of an entire ass group of people, Austrians that don't know these people, like, this is going to make our future child. Like, the translation hopefully might have hopefully gotten lost on those guys. But I like the fact that we're sort of getting this underlying current of, like, they're learning a lot about each other. And it even comes out here when they get directions, right? And it's like the infamous, okay, do you want turn by turn or do you want an overall route? And it seems like from the next time on, that's going to very much come to the forefront between these two. Their boom booms might more so be them butting heads than anything.
Okay, so the teams are all headed towards the yodeling, and we see, you know, right off the bat, both Claire and Rex Ryan are struggling with this. Now, for Claire, it sounds like that it's just like an issue in terms of her musical ability. For Rex Ryan, and I feel like I didn't know this, that Rex Ryan is dyslexic, and he was having a hard time with reading all of the words and the lyrics.
I'm pretty sure the story, if I recall correctly, was like he only really found out like 2006-07 because his son, I think, had gotten tested for ADHD, and so he's like, all right, let me get myself tested. I was like, oh, actually, Rex, you're dyslexic, you're dyslexic, perhaps. And
I was
so
waiting for you to say that, Mike.
But who would have thought it was a night for dyslexia awareness on CBS reality? And I think where one succeeds and Ellie, one falls in Rex Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Really, dyslexia and hats, that was the theme of the night.
Maybe that's why they're like, all right, we've got a connecting theme between these two episodes. Make them 90 minutes apiece. Don't squeeze the real love boat in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting that this was the 90-minute episode of The Amazing Race. I think we were talking about this at one point of, like, what was the origin story? Was it just like, hey, the real love boat's not ready? Did Survivor want a 90-minute episode? And so The Amazing Race had to, like, pad what would probably have been a 60-minute episode. Mike, I feel like you're so tapped in. What do you think that this ultimately ended up with two 90-minute episodes this week?
I think my assumption is, because this is, you know, the umpteen time that we put out the disclaimer, that oftentimes the length and airtime of episodes are not determined by the production company that makes these shows, but by the network that schedules these shows out. My assumption and hope that I'm trying to manifest out there is that CBS is trying to put out a little test balloon of, okay, do we need to keep making these 1 hour Rob Cesternino and Jetty Autumn feeder shows that need to, like, squeeze in between our reality TV lineups? Or could we get away with producing 90 minute episodes of these shows and put them back to back? So my hope is that they were just sort of piloting this out to see if it would actually work. In my opinion, on both fronts, I do think it was a big success. But that would be my initial assumption because, yeah, even looking at both episodes, I don't think any of them were as, like, hugely climactic or eventful enough to necessitate the 90-minute runtime. I mean, again, the Amazing Race episode had a lot of placement changing, which was exciting, but also it was only three tasks in a 90-minute episode. You'd think if they knew it was a 90-minute episode ahead of time, they would have put much more into the leg. Like, the mega leg would have been a 90-minute episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Amazing Race Canada packs five legs into a 60-minute episode, you know? So it's... I think you're right, Mike. It's like, let's just take any random episode and add 30 minutes to it and see if it's still watchable. And in this case, this is a good place to have that episode when there's this many teams left and this much to do. I do not think a 90-minute episode when there are five teams left and three tasks on the leg, that's not going to be as fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that that's a good theory of CBS feeling like, hey, it's got to be cheaper to, you know, if we have two reality shows, like, could we get these reality shows to be 90 minutes instead of like having to make a third reality show to fill a third hour? I think that's a good theory. But I also do think that Survivor could have requested a 90 minute episode for their second episode. They asked for basically a 2 hour episode. They knew they only had one tribal council that they were doing in the first episode. So obviously Survivor created their premiere knowing it was a 2 hour episode. And I wonder if they wanted to then follow that up with, okay, now give us 90 minutes for the second week, because we really need to establish who these characters are. And maybe they feel like that's like something that they really want to do on Survivor.
Yeah. Though you never know. I mean, Ghosts, right? Like, is something they could just throw on for a random half hour to fill in the gap so that Amazing Race could air at 10. But I think it worked really nicely together. I mean, listen, it was a bit of a marathon. I think we'll figure out by the end of this between the three of us if we felt the pairing of Survivor and Amazing Race was a match made in heaven, considering this is really the first time they're doing it for an entire season. But again, I really enjoyed it. If they indeed move forward with 90-minute episodes, my hope, and maybe this pushes against your point, Rob, of like, all right, listen, we can sort of like stretch the same amount of content without having to produce a show that ends up being in the middle there. My hope is then just like put more tasks into the episode, which unfortunately might be antithetical to their idea of like same amount of content, but cheaper.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything from the yodeling task in particular that you want to highlight? Or would it be easier to talk about the actual teams and then go through how they ultimately fared throughout the whole leg?
I think that makes more sense because, you know, the detour, I feel like there was not a lot to write home about in comparison to the yodeling, right? Again, it was more musical stuff. It was either doing our traditional dance, which it seemed like there was that many problems with. I will say the task judge was a little odd in doing the whole like swerve thing, right? Of like, sometimes the task judges love to F with the Amazing Race contestants, right? Of like, yeah, you got it. But I think the task judge said, sorry, that was near perfect.
Yeah.
Like, that's very much like dunking you into cold water and then immediately putting you into hot water.
Yeah, that makes me mad because I don't care if you do a fake out, but make the fake out make sense.
Yeah, near Austrian style. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, that the task judge reminded me a little bit of Jürgen from last season of Great British Bake Off.
Oh.
Interesting.
Like a little bit of the deadpan there. And I'm not sure that everybody was prepared for the deadpan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I wish when they went to London last year that we could have had more appearance from Bake Off contestants. I think they really missed a well there. Especially, didn't they have like, oh, no, that was in France that they did the cake. No, in England they did the cake decorating.
Yeah, they did the
right?
cake and decorating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like just bring in a couple people. Bring in your bring in everybody. Even bring in Paul Hollywood there to like give the Hollywood handshake if they get the United Kingdom, the European Union questions correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Should we start with the teams that did the best, or should we start at the bottom of the pack?
I think we can start at the top and work our way down.
Okay,
that's how the show does it.
All right. So let's talk about the adventures of Marcus and Michael, who had such an interesting ride in this episode where I think that they learned a lot about each other. That I think that Michael felt like pretty good about, you know, his saxophone playing. Okay, I'm going to be able to dominate here with my musical ability. What he didn't know is that he had a secret clarinet player who would actually be the MVP in Marcus.
Uh-oh, is that going to be the next show that comes around if we don't get 90-minute episodes, Undercover Clarinet Player?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was interesting because, again, you think that these guys, again, like the entire story coming in was that Michael followed Marcus and everything he did, including into the military. But they remind us that, like, they're 8 years apart. We learned last episode, right, they only see each other once or twice. And the more I'm looking at it, the more I'm realizing, like, outside of Emily and Molly, do these guys like know each other the least out of all the Amazing Race teams this season?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of ironic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting about the big like age gap between the two of them, where I think it was Marcus was talking about how almost I got the sense as somebody who I have a, you know, I'm 8 years older than my brother, and that I felt like that Marcus was saying that that Michael grew up differently than he grew up. Like it was almost like that he grew up in a, like a, the parents were different people by the time that Michael came along.
Is he saying that he's the do-over?
Yeah, I think so. Where talking about how like, oh, he had like saxophone lessons. Like, who are these people?
Yeah, they're like, oh, all right, well, we tried clarinet and we learned our lesson. Get this kid on the saxophone. I want him an Arsenio stat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure whether it was that like my parents had things figured out by the time that they that my brother came along, or they were just kind of over it let my younger brother do more whatever he wanted. But either way, seemed like that it was a totally different ballgame.
I did love Marcus at one point during, because Michael was probably one of the better ones at the yodeling, right? That's pretty much what wins them the leg, is like Michael gets off to a hot start with the yodeling and then they pretty much don't look back. I did love Marcus just like giving the advice in the background, right, of make love to it.
Yes.
And Lumumba's like, oh, I've got an idea.
Oh, right. Boy. Yeah. Yeah. Marcus is feeling like Michael. Like, yeah, he says he's got to make love to it. That's the secret to yodeling.
I don't know. Did he analyze the lyrics? Is that what hoity heiti means?
Well, I think it's more that you had to do those hand motions.
Yeah, the milking.
You had to put some soul into the hand motions.
Yes, yes. That's the twins were not doing the milking correctly.
Yeah, this really is like the, we find out it's the boys to men of yodeling that they were performing.
Yeah. But a first place finish for Michael and Marcus. It was not a flawless leg for them, but I took them number one when we did our draft. And I felt like that this was a leg where you sort of saw that potential from Michael and Marcus. And if they can get on the same page, they can be a very dominant team in this race.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they proved a lot as to like, why they were such a team to watch going in. And they also had the wherewithal to be like, okay, we know our mistake from last time. We took off without even getting directions, and that's what screwed us over. So let's take our time this time. And yeah, they make one small adjustment and they do really well. That's also a really great skill to have. I think to your point, the still one big thing that's left over is, as Marcus opines at the end of this, or alpines, this idea of like, we're both type A personalities. It seemed like maybe due in part of the fact that the roadblock had Michael by himself, like it allowed them to not necessarily butt heads over the course of it. We got them a little bit doing that in the bell test, but didn't ultimately lead to their downfall. I still think they might need to fix that, maybe get to know a bit more of each other in terms of their team dynamic. But yeah, I think they very much proved how they were able to easily rebound this week and definitely be a team to beat moving forward.
Yeah. And Michael was getting flustered, it seemed like, and Marcus was the one that was able to sort of maybe not to the degree that Rex was trying to coach Tim, but like, all right, do we need a minute? Do we need to take a break? And then ultimately they got it. So they come in first place. Just I thought they got an interesting prize for this leg of the amazing race. Phil told them, you have won Expedia reward points for a trip to Lima, Peru. It's like, did I win a trip or did I win points?
Yeah, that seemed odd to me as well. It's like, do they have to spend it on Peru or could they spend it on something else? Like, could you just rack up all your points and go somewhere really baller?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that Peru is not baller, but I would want to know.
You would use like, your points somewhere else.
I might use my points. If I won two trips, I might combine them and take one mega trip. You know,
mega trip.
Yeah, I agree. But I sort of like that prize. Then this feels the most utilitarian out of all of them, right? Like it's great to win a free vacation, but if you could have your pick of where to go, that's even better than just like, all right, I have to go to this country. Great. Thanks, Amazing Race. Yeah. Like they might have arguably gotten one of the better prizes in Amazing Race history.
Maybe. Yeah. Jess, can I accrue like more points? Is it like the challenge? And then if I lose, can somebody steal my points?
Are these like garnets? It's like the genius.
Yeah. Michael and Marcus have 40,000 Expedia points in their travel bank.
Oh man, too bad there's no U-turns on this.
Sorry.
That'd be a prime reason to U-turn somebody, right? I'm like, you got your points, man. I got to take them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Or, okay, that if there were non-elimination legs, all right, but we will be deducting half of your Expedia points. That is a penalty for ultimately.
I feel like we accidentally started something and I'm very worried this is going to now show up and it's not a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Or if they are able to eventually get rid of the Amazing Race plane and bring back teams, book their own travel. What if it's like, okay, if you have enough points, you will get to the next destination. But if you don't, your journey ends here.
Or you sit in first class.
Fire tokens. Yeah. This is the fire tokens of Amazing Race. It's too complicated.
The second team to finish on this leg of the Amazing Race, we've been talking about them. It's Glenda and Lumumba, and they had just a great leg all the way around. They were so much fun to watch them that I was so glad they picked the dancing task, that it was very fun to watch them go through the dance. They talked through some of the challenges of Glenda being 7 inches taller than Lumumba and having to twirl her.
I love the whole like seventh grade play choreography stuff, right? I'm like, all right, hold out your finger, Glenda, and Lumumba, you twirl her using that. Again, like these dance are very qualitatively judged rather than quantitatively. So yeah, they didn't need to be exactly pitch perfect in terms of being hand in hand, considering the height discrepancy between the two and poor Glenda having to limbo, essentially.
They just had to be near Austrian style.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That was near Austrian style, was holding out the one finger and twirling.
Yeah. What did we think about the detour names for this? That it was, I forget what it was, bells ringing or partners swinging.
Mm-hmm. And then I think they saw, Glenda Lumumba saw partners swinging. They're like, oh, okay. There are alternate routes to Boom Boom. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't realize we were doing that this season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As soon as you said that, I'm like, I'm just going to let Mike go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me sing some music to set in the mood. Hoity!
Yeah. I did give a Phil Kogan raised eyebrow for the couples that jumped at the opportunity for partner swinging. Raised to that side of the detour.
You know, it takes all kinds, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
We don't shame on this podcast.
Yeah, of course not.
We're not going to yuck anyone's yum. Yeah.
No. Okay. So Glenda and Lumumba, they look like they are in great position to be a real force in the race. Anything else we want to talk about them from this leg?
No, it should be pointed out that, two top three finishes. Not only that, two second place finishes in a row. We love consistency on the Amazing Race, particularly when it's consistently good, right? Because the Amazing Race constantly changing every single leg. The fact that they were able to succeed pretty much on everything so far, it shows that they are a fairly strong team as long as they are on the same page. Again, next week, maybe the promos are a bit misleading. Seems like perhaps they're not going to be on the same page. But as long as they are, I think they're a really, really good team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Glenda nailed that roadblock, it looked like, on the first try.
Yeah.
Did anybody else do that?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think everyone else, maybe Maddie did it on the first try. Maybe I'm confusing that with the dancing. But everyone else, I think, took two or more.
Mm-hmm. So, great job there by Glenda. And then our third place team was going to be Lyndon and Sharik, who had a nice leg of the race. We got to learn even more about them. We got to see Linton. Did Sharik say that he used to rap?
I think it's more of a casual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not to go back to Eminem and Marcus and Michael, but I don't think this is like the B Rabbit of Jamaica. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think that Linton was just doing it casually on the side, but he also, I think, was someone that absolutely killed that roadblock. And I really love Linton and Sharik. I really like, Linton vocalizing this idea of, I didn't have a father growing up, so I wanted to be in Sharik's life all the time. That's why I went to dance lessons with her, essentially. I think it's a really great relationship that, again, I'm glad we had the extra time to see. And they're also a really competent team. They went fourth then third as well. Again, showing that consistency. I think, they ended up being like the second to last pick in our draft. I think we were just looking at sort of the age discrepancy behind it, but like, Linton's able to keep up with some of these younger people, and I think they are a surprisingly strong team that I think could also be a good threat to take it
mm-hmm.
home.
Yeah. think that maybe the thought of, you know, father and daughter teams, maybe after the last season, we thought maybe might not be at the top of the pack.
Yeah, but they hang in. Mm-hmm. They're they tenacious.
They hang in there. Okay. All right. So then fourth place, somehow, Derek and Claire. Let's talk about the tenacity of Claire and Derek X. Do they have a ship name?
So you had put Cleric? When the infamous Us Weekly shoe came out, you had said Cleric. I don't think it's caught on. I think it's just because, as you talked about last week, Derek has become Derek X outside of Big Brother, that like Cleric X sounds like an antihistamine instead of a ship name.
Ask your doctor if Cleric X works for you. Have you have delays of more than 4 hours? Consult Phil Kogan.
Yes, it's your yodeling subpar. Cleric X might be right for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So for Derek and Claire, still, I mean, is there an adopted name for them?
Should we come up with something now?
I mean, if we don't have it, maybe people will let us know. Like, if they have a preferred name, I would love to use it. I just feel like, I feel like that these Big Brother couples tend to have a name.
You two would know better than I do.
Yeah. I maybe they don't have one.
What about Derriere?
No, consider it. Yeah.
All the panache of a sixth grade bully threw it out there, Mike.
Yeah.
That's me, Chess, in a nutshell. That's my taste.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I got to give it up to them, because initially going into this leg, right, we had said they did everything kind of near perfect in the first leg. And as they were vocalizing, like, yeah, we did everything right on the first try. We just have to keep at it. And I thought they had found their Achilles heel very early on with what happened with poor Claire, sunk from first to 10th, again, as mentioned before. But really, they are master navigators. And I think maybe this was part of the comprehensive preparation that Claire's parents had done with her and Derek prior to the race. But they are able to jump all the way up to fourth, I think due mostly to the fact that they got into Innsbruck and to the detour at an alarmingly quick rate compared to the other teams.
Yeah. You can prepare to read maps. I guess you can't prepare to yodel before you go on the Amazing Race.
Yeah, I don't think that's on the short list. Like, that's way below walking around with a bottle on your head. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
As things you do to prepare.
Are we going to see future teams now, videos of them at home going, oh, while they're watching it on the TV just to practice?
I hope not. If you're videotaping that, like, stop it now.
Stop.
Nobody wants to see that.
Stop it. Yeah. Okay. So they ultimately get out of yodeling. They are way behind the pack, but they make up a lot of ground and they get to the bell ringing and pick the correct side of the detour. And they're able to really ace the bell ringing.
This is something I think Derek voiced it. He said he played the piano. Mm-hmm. And this is very much, it's just counting and picking up the right thing at the right time. Like, that's piano skills.
It's all percussion.
It's all percussion. I played in a handbell choir for most of my childhood.
Oh.
I looked at this. I'm like, this is my five-hole task.
Yes.
I could have done that all like by myself without a partner.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the problem was that you had to have a partner. So even if one of the people was good at it.
Yeah, that's true. Like, your partner could really screw you.
Mm-hmm.
What I do find interesting is that, at least from what Marcus and Michael seem to vocalize, they were thrown off by the Weird Al-esque accordion player, that Weird Alpine, perhaps, that was playing along when the detour performance ended up happening. Do you think they were told about that in the clue and they missed it? Was this another, like, swerve to throw the teams off? Because I was surprised when there was a random accompanist that ended up backing up their handbells.
Well, I don't know what the setup was of the venue, but you feel like that when other teams are going, I mean, and this wasn't the case for Michael and Marcus because they were there by themselves, but you would think you would hear the accordion, right?
I think it was in another room.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like you had to go to another room. It's possible you didn't hear it.
Accordions are pretty loud.
It can be.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, look, Mike, gotta roll with the punches. This is an amazing race.
So. Yeah, but I think these are two woodwind players, right? When you bring in something from the rhythm section, I think that's naturally bound to throw them off.
Okay. We get to our fifth place team. Okay. That is going to be... who is fifth? Is it...
Croquetas.
Croquetas, yes. Okay. Bounce back week for them.
I mean, yeah, it was very up and down for them. They were one of the ones to really get lost besides Quinton and Maddie going to Innsbruck, but they recover fairly quickly. And yeah, they are able to get their five hole right in the form of the dancing. I think that's pretty much the reason why they end up placing fifth, is like they pretty much get it in only a couple of tries, if maybe only one. And it shows that, like, even though Luis is not a dancer, if you're married to a dancer, I think you've got to have at least some sort of rhythm, right? Hmm. Considering how much she probably does partner dancing with him at some point in their day to day.
Sometimes opposites attract, Mike.
I suppose so. But even in that case, like, I don't know, initially, right? Because especially in ballroom dancing, like, the women oftentimes have to do much more than the men, right? That's the whole Ginger Rogers thing, did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards and in heels. Mm-hmm. But the guys had to do the odd, the knee slapping stuff. And it seemed like Luis was able to pull that off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So kudos to them, a bounce back week for coming in fifth. Abby and Will, they are ultimately going to be in sixth place.
Yeah, there's not much to say about them. Their entire personality thus far has just been they're very excited to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about Will's Matthew Turner-esque idealizations, right? Of like, yeah, we're just waiting on the ring fund. That's the only reason why I haven't proposed. And maybe $1 million would help that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, you got to have a backup plan, too. You know, only one team's going to win the Amazing Race, Will.
I was going to say, like, I think that Abby would appreciate the gesture above the ring itself.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe this is a Chekhov's ring drop. Maybe there's a non-zero chance that Will, like, fashions his own and ends up, we do a, for the first time in a little bit, our since maybe what, season 30, I think, with the lifeguards, a pit stop proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, maybe proposals are played out. Maybe Will and James did the best one and we can't ever top it. Yeah. So
yeah,
I think maybe. Maybe map proposals are played out.
Yep. So kudos to Abby also, who really aced the yodeling. She was also one of the people who got it the quickest. So they ended up really jumping up. They were kind of started. I think they started in the last group. They ended up making up some ground, finish middle of the pack here in sixth. So our 20s here. They ultimately ended up falling a couple of spots from last week, and there were some struggles here for the twins.
See, it's interesting, though, because I would argue they had more struggles last week, but that was their stronger performance by placement. I think it just to show what like a cluster F the scramble was. I will say I think it was
commenters are not going to like that, Mike.
Like, listen, come for me, all right? You're feeding me. I think
Colin
that.
Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. I think that. I think was it Emily who did the yodeling? I think had a fantastic deadpan, right? Of like, yeah, it's easy. You just have to understand it. It's like poor Rex and Claire who are just like absolutely dying after 5, 6, 7 attempts. Emily's like, this is child's play. Mm-hmm. I could get through this in 2 times without even sweating.
Yeah, it seems like that they had a little bit more struggle on the partner swinging, where it was a little harder for them to know who was supposed to be in which role in the partner swinging.
I think the production was confused as well, right? When you have two identical people and you're like, all right, who am I adjudicating where?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had to point it out. I'd be like, well, she has earrings and she's going to be, you know, she's going to lead and I'm going to follow and she's. They had to point out all the little things. And these are usually things back when I was really very earnest about this podcasting gig, I would try to figure out which one was which in the set of identical twins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know Emily is the mother. That's the one I remember because I know and I think she's the one who's driving because they talk about that. Right. With like her having a lot of patience as opposed to Molly being the more like go, go, go. But yeah, I love this story. I like them vocalizing, like, it's not even about the race days. We want the downtime to get to know each other. And Phil's like, no time at the pit stop. We don't want you to get to know each other. That's what makes good TV.
Okay, speaking of good TV, let's talk about the team that I think when all is said and done, I think this is the team that is going to pound for pound give us the most drama and the most conflict to talk about here on the season of the Amazing Race. And that is Team Love and Light, ironically.
It's always the love and light people that cause the most drama, is it not?
What I find is that the people that talk the most about the love and the light also seem to also have the most chaos around them. And that was the case certainly this week for Rich and Dom. We got, again, Dom is a Murfairy, okay? Not Murph from Tough as Nails.
I'm just imagining a Murph maid, which is just like King Triton and Murph, like, Ariel, you can't go out and experience the world.
If he's looking for a Halloween costume, I think we solved it for him.
Yeah. Okay. So they are out there. It was a little bit of a struggle for Dom with the yodeling, but you got through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a remarkable struggle.
No.
No. But what was interesting, though, is obviously the hat is going to become a big thing. But what I was intrigued by is, okay, they just left it in the car. They have to go back. I did not see the hat on Dom's head when they left the yodeling. First of all, I 100% thought a team is going to forget their hat, right? Because we got it mentioned umpteen times. You have to wear the full costume, et cetera, et cetera. Those hats don't come cheap. But when Don left it with Duff the Task without the hat, I thought they were boned because it was like, oh, you have to go back and get it. Well, it's all the way back at the freaking hillside with the lonely goat herd. Now they have to drive all the way back there. They're screwed. But no, it just turned out that I guess Dom put it in her backpack and left it in the car.
Yeah. So we get the moment where we hear the, you know, of course, the infamous Amazing Race wrong sound chime. And okay, here we go. Here's Chekhov's hat. All right. This is going to come back at some point of that they don't have it. Ultimately, they struggle also with the bells, that this is a struggle for them to get through. And, you know, it's so interesting to see the team that's, you know, about positivity, you know, how they're coping with adversity.
I thought something that I want to break the fourth wall for a second and talk about this hat, because I wonder, is there a point, like, production obviously knew exactly where that hat was.
Yeah.
Production definitely knew they left it in the car, and that was why they were sent back to go get it. Because if they had left the hat up on the hill with the lonely goat herd, they 100% would have had a penalty instead of having to go back and get the hat.
Yeah. Now, Phil clearly knew that the hat was nearby. He's like, yeah. I strongly suggest you should go get the hat.
What I find interesting is usually in past Amazing Race seasons, Phil would say, you are team number X when they arrive, not Derek X. But if you faced a penalty or if you had to go complete something, they would say, you are the blank team to arrive. And that was the clue to us Amazing Race fans, right? Of like, oh, okay, they did something wrong. They have to go back and rectify something. But now Phil is willy-nilly, right, saying you are the blank team to arrive. And so it very much confuses me to be like, okay, but are they doing something wrong? I kept waiting on pins and needles of like, is this another donate to the orphanage scenario from Amazing Race, what, like 19, where everyone makes a mistake? But no, the vernacular just got a little bit more massaged over the course of this leg, at least, as Phil is using his very quiet indoor voice to greet these teams at the pit stop.
Yeah. All right, so they have to go back and look for the hat, and that sort of like opens up the door for what we're going to have basically like this three-way finish for last place. So as Rich and Dom go get their hat, we see Aubrey and David check in. They're team number 8. A bigger week for Aubrey and David, but I still feel like that we don't really get to know Aubrey and David. I might know them the least out of what do we have, 10 remaining teams?
Yeah, 100%. I am a little surprised, like maybe if we dedicated like 2 less minutes to the yodeling and 2 more minutes to an Aubrey and David segment. I will also say they're one of the more back of the pack teams. Remember, we thought they might've been eliminated last leg, right? They ended up beating out Austin and Nina, came in 11th place. Now they came in 8th, would have been in 9th were it not for Rich and Dom with the hat. So I think they're one of the teams that is struggling the most, but also paired with the fact that we don't know a lot about them. We may be on the watch here of the time we do get a personal segment about them. Our old friend Personal Story Bump makes a return, and that's the leg they're eliminated on.
Yeah. it'll be interesting. We have the Mega Leg, so we have two opportunities that we could get something from them, even if they're not eliminated coming up next week. All right, Mike, you set up at the beginning of this. You really thought this was a great episode. We had the excitement of who is going to be the last to arrive. We had three teams with three very different stories at this point. We talked about Rich and Dom having to go back and get the hat. Let's bring back Quentin and Maddie into this, where we talked about how they were in the wrong country. They needed to now come back and get to where they needed to go. And then also ace the tasks. It just so happened these were two tasks that were very much in their wheelhouse.
It was very interesting to me. Like, they had to have dancing because there are three teams that have professional dancers on the teams. Mm-hmm. But you have to strike a balance because it's really, at a certain point, it becomes unfair to the teams that do not contain professional dancers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was really, it was cool to watch them like just walk right into it and do the dance without any kind of struggle whatsoever, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we got to learn a little bit more. Maybe one of the reasons why we thought it was going to be them going, right, is like at the beginning of the episode, we finally get to know them after they had a bit of a quiet first leg. They were far from quiet in this episode. But something we didn't really note during the preseason, but it's a good reminder, Quentin was one of the first male NFL cheerleaders, and I believe was the first male NFL cheerleader to perform at the Super Bowl mm-hmm. last year.
Yeah. And he also has military service, correct?
That is a good question.
Did I make that up?
You may have.
I thought that was part of the story. Okay, well, apologies if I got that wrong. I don't want to have stolen valor for Quentin.
you're right about that, I believe. He says, I'm reading a tweet that he had about, I've also had the opportunity to go on multiple military tours, meeting, mm-hmm. inspiring and being inspired by so many men and women. So maybe he's performed at military shows?
He might have done like a USO thing.
Got it. I thought he was in the military and then he became a cheerleader. I thought that that's my bad for misinterpreting that, but an impressive run for Quentin and Maddie, who we thought could have been taken out early, now I think are going to be I suspect they get right back to the top of the pack.
Yeah, I think this is very much like a Marcus and Michael-esque, okay, we were doing really well, and then we had one big catastrophic mistake and like survive by the skin of our teeth. Let's improve upon that. And so I would imagine they're going to double and triple check any people they ask for directions next time, slash maybe do a bit of a common sense analysis of when somebody says drive to Austria and they say it's a 10-minute drive. Do we think that could be legitimate or not?
Yeah. I guess, you know, it's tough. These countries in Europe are all near each other, you know?
Yeah. Who even knows how big Europe is?
It's hard to say. So, all right. They bounce back. We'll see if this issue with directions rears its ugly head again for Quentin and Maddie. And then ultimately we get Tim and Rex. We talked about Rex yodeling and having some struggles there. It was interesting that I thought that Rex seemed to not really struggle so much with the bells. It was really Tim who seemed to have more problems. And Rex compliments himself, said he did a hell of a coaching job getting Tim through it.
Yeah, I mean, after every time, right, because since they were the only people there, they had the benefit of, unlike a queue being set up, which I think is one of the reasons why Claire and Derek X fall so far, right? Like, Rex and Kim can just try again and again and again and again right in front of the judges. And so it was interesting to have them keep failing and for Tim to be like, God dang it. And then for Rex to be like, no, we got this. We're going to do it next time.
Mm-hmm.
Very motivational. I think Rich and Dom would be very proud of the job that Rex was doing, trying to keep his teammate going right there in front of the bells.
Yeah.
And the celebration when they finally got it, I thought was great. When he's like screaming on the last ring. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
I was celebrating with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really great celebrate victory gestures from Rex in both tasks here. I also love him on the yodeling roadblock, right? It took him like five tries, but after every time he'll like finish off the yodel, be like, come on, it's happening this time. I've got it. Like really trying to manifest a clear signal from the judges, but almost always it would never happen. And then he finally blissfully got it and started yodeling on his way out.
So the episode title this week is Patience is the New Me. That's a quote that is said by Rex in the episode. How much of a thing is it that the person that says the quote that has the name of the episode is the team that gets eliminated? Is there any science to this?
There's no science to it.
There's no correlation. I think they just picked the best soundbite. And so, yeah, I would imagine, listen, there are so many Amazing Race episode titles that I'm sure it has happened a handful of times, but it almost never corresponds to how well a team is going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Let me just give you the Amazing Race 33 episode titles and see if any of them ring a bell, as we saw Rex and Tim struggle with. Are any of them okay? Episode one was "We're Back." Okay, maybe Phil said that. Okay, number two was the quote: "It can't be that easy." I got to think that Penn said that when he was going through the clues.
They have it written out on Wikipedia, Rob.
Yeah, oh. it was the mail rail test.
Okay, then yep. Jess, you take it.
Okay, well, third one was, who has this one in the bag? And that was a roadblock prompt.
Okay.
Oh.
And then a lot of these, like, I would say the majority of these are not even racer quotes for 33. So 33 is kind of an outlier. Episode four was called "Ready to Restart the Race." And that was apparently something Phil said.
Yeah.
Episode five was called "Stairway to Hell." And that was Akbar, which that might've been their episode. I can't remember.
No, it was non-elimination leg.
Non-elimination leg. Okay.
Yeah.
So episode six was "Say Cheese," which is a detour title.
Yes. Now I'm assuming that was with the maggot cheese.
Yeah.
Okay. Jess, did you watch the challenge? The challenge, no. CBS?
I did not.
Okay. So Kayla, you know, I don't want to spoil things, but did very well. Okay.
Yeah.
And there was a point that they had to eat gross food. And the gross food they had to eat was a whole onion and a bunch of cloves of garlic. And Kayla really struggled with this. She was getting sick. And Kayla said, I would have rather eaten the maggot cheese again than eat the whole raw onion.
I'm not a fan of raw onion. I could see that. I could see having to eat a lot of it. That still seems like that's pretty weak sauce as far as gross food.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, definitely. But listen, weak sauce is the mildest way to describe the finale of the challenge. I think there were some other issues. Yeah, the sauce was funky at best. I think it's the quantity of it, right? Like the maggot cheese, if I recall correctly, like they didn't have to eat a lot of it at all. It was just it's more like so the, oh my God, we have to do this. This was, eat a whole raw onion, I think. The problem was a whole raw was really the descriptors that ended up making it for a bad time. Okay. But yeah, it was an interesting, like, Amazing Race throwback to have that actually mentioned on the challenge proper.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then that's episode two. That's the second leg of the Amazing Race. Anything else that we want to highlight while we're here?
I wanted to highlight the greeter for this leg of the race.
Yes.
She looked like a Disney princess. Mm-hmm. And it was this beautiful palatial setting. And then you had Phil Kogan standing next to her, dressed in Phil Kogan clothes, looking like a total scrub.
Yeah, Phil was interesting because, again, I mentioned it before, but it felt like he was using his indoor voice when he was greeting teams. And I guess it makes sense given that this is a museum, but the memo did not get communicated to the teams. I guess Phil's like, you are team number three. And they are screaming their faces off like they won the lottery.
Can't hide that excitement. What are you going to do?
I feel like sometimes they give them rules. Like if you have the pit stop in a museum, you have to walk. But I also remember Penn yelling in the museum last season was kind of a highlight.
Yeah. Mike, it's just another reason that the Murph Fairy should have been there. Like, wow, Phil, it's really a great honor that we're team number seven.
And then they just have a low talking contest.
Yes.
Maybe it could have also been that Phil was sick. This could have been like that one tribal council in Survivor Palau when Jeff had a hoarse voice all of a sudden out of nowhere, that maybe Phil was just under the weather, was like, move me inside. Mm-hmm. I need an excuse to talk quietly to these teams.
Roofer Lee would not have been good. He would have been yelling about it being a wang dang doodle of a leg.
Yeah, if we're going with the infamous Murph made Danny team, that Danny would have been like literally bouncing off the wall.
Yep. Okay. Yep. All right.
They have that sound effect, the old crap sound. That yes. The gamelan / water harp, I'm not sure what it is, sounded exactly like the bells. So when people screwed up on the bells, it was very confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we finally figured out the source of the Foley, much like last season's task, right? Of like how they do the screw up sound. They just took one of those handbells and said, this is how we make the music of the Amazing Race for when you screw up, much like you do in this task.
I pull back the curtain. Okay. Next time we are going to have leg number 3, the mega leg. Where are we headed for the mega leg? Or part one of the mega leg?
I'm not sure. I think I'm not entirely sure, actually. I don't know if we are flying somewhere else or if we're staying in Austria for another leg. Here's a big question. So the mega leg, infamously in 32, when it was quote unquote introduced, even though it existed beforehand, essentially two legs crammed into one. Now, Amazing Race is going back to 1 hour. Does that mean we're going to get essentially a to be continued next week, and that the next elimination is going to happen 2 weeks from now instead of next week?
That's my guess.
Yeah.
I think this is how we account for no non-elimination legs. We cheap out and we give us a mega leg.
Yeah. I mean, I would be surprised if it's anything else but that.
Right. So I think for people, adjust your dials. We're not going to get, because I think Amazing Race 32 did the mega leg in one big 2 hour block. Mm-hmm. We're not getting that. We are done with the time slot shenanigans. We're now back to 1 hour Survivor, 1 hour Amazing Race moving forward.
Okay. My question is, how many mega legs will we get?
So there were 12 pit stops. And if you eliminate a team at the end of every leg, there would theoretically only be 10 legs, aka 10 episodes. So I'm imagining we're going to get 2 mega legs. I would say probably one at the beginning now. And I would imagine probably not one until like the end, right? Until like the final 5, final 4. That could be an interesting way to do the quote unquote penultimate leg, is like one big, okay, here's your final race to the finish. Give it everything you've got so you can eke it across those final 3 spots. That would be my initial assumption. Because we also have to remember that, again, this is going up against Survivor. It has to finish before Survivor finishes, right? Because Survivor does that big 3 hour time chunk in which it does its finale on a Wednesday. Unless Amazing Race is going to air on a different day, like Big Brother did its finale, it has to finish before Survivor does. And so I'm imagining if Survivor is going to go like 13, 14 weeks, that would put this at about 12 weeks or so.
Okay. All right. Mark your calendars accordingly. All right. We'll leave it here for Amazing Race episode number 2. Jess, what's coming up for you?
Well, at the time you're listening to this, we have plans to talk about The Walking Dead over on Post Show Recaps with Josh Wigler and AJ Mass and Chappelle, and the Season 11C premiere is going to be happening this Sunday, and then Monday morning you'll be able to hear us talk about everything that happened in that episode. And then we're going to be covering Walking Dead all season. So I've got 2 podcasts a week. And then there is another project that is on my horizon that I'm not allowed to talk about yet. Oh. So we're going to keep that on the down low, but I'm going to be up to 3 podcasts a week starting very, very soon. Wow. But I can't tell you what it is.
Okay. Very, very secretive. Okay. All right.
I mean, you know what it is, Rob.
I know what it is. I don't know. Yeah. Don't reveal all the secrets.
No, of course.
Tell Mike after the show's over.
We'll tell him after.
No, I'm intrigued. Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
All right. Mike Bloom has very many public projects to tell us about.
I'm nothing but public, Rob, mm-hmm. I think, at this point, considering how much talking and writing I do. Yeah, I mean, I also just want to give final thoughts again. My hat off to The Amazing Race this episode.
Bring the hat back, Mike.
Okay, sorry. My hat on for this episode. Show off the feather there as well. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I like the ability to get to know the teams a bit better. And the excitement, at least, I think, made it worth a 90-minute episode for me. So again, consider me, I already tweeted this out for Survivor, but thumbs up on, at least in the early stages of these shows, making 90-minute episodes a la The Challenge. But as you said, Rob, A lot of CBS reality going on out there. In particular, the Big Brother 24 finale happened. I was able to be the first boots on the ground and talk with the final three house guests, Taylor, Monty, and Turner. Mm-hmm. If you have seen a clip from the Monty interview has gone a bit viral in the past few days. So if you want to check out the source material behind that,
Mike Bloom is a real tough interviewer.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Tough as nails interviewer.
Mike Bloom's going to call you out on your BS.
That's what I come for.
Yeah.
Listen, I am Mr. BS, so it takes one to know one. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can check all that going on. But the churning continues when it comes to CBS reality. As you mentioned, I will have my own interview with Rex and Tim happening later today. Very excited for that. Again, these guys were such characters that I'm sure they're going to have a lot of really fun thoughts. I'll also have my interview with the second contestant voted out of Survivor 43. And then, of course, the B&B is happening. We're going to be doing a Survivor episode this weekend with Big Brother Canada 10 winner Kevin Jacobs.
Oh, that's fun.
Which should be. Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. The little winter baby is going to come on and talk about a very non-winter setting in Survivor. And then we're also going to do a Big Brother wrap-up as well with Maggie Morgan. And then over on Pusha Recaps, doing my usual ish with House of the Dragon and The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, talking fantasy stuff, having a lot of fun with that as well. Lots of fun has to speak about there. So, yeah, plenty of things going on. But I'm happy that we're sort of now the couple of weeks of on-ramping some reality shows and off-ramping other ones are blissfully coming to an end for my own schedule's sake. Again, we're just getting back to 1 hour Survivor, 1 hour Amazing Race moving forward. And considering how both seasons have gone so far, I'm really happy to keep moving with them both.
Okay. Well, this was very fun. I really enjoyed this episode of The Amazing Race. Looking forward to getting back with the both of you next week to talk about episode number 3. Of course, we have everything going on with Survivor and some fun interviews as well up at robhasawebsite.com. So be sure to check that out. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss anything we drop. robhasawebsite.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.